to the book of Daniel, chapter 3, book of Daniel, chapter 3. Read the first 18 verses, very familiar passage, one that we're all well acquainted with. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. Then the princes and the governors and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces were gathered together under the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald, a messenger, cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the people, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king, "Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man shall hear the sound of the cornet, and the flute, and the harp, and the sackbut, and the psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, so fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do ye not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, and the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Again, Nebuchadnezzar had a plan for these Hebrews that he had taken captive. It was his idea to take the most gifted, the most talented of the Hebrews, the young men, the strong men, those who showed some aptitude for learning, those who were very quick to understand, and it was his idea to brainwash and re-educate these, making them loyal subjects of Babylon. To accomplish this, as we saw this morning in Daniel chapter 1, he established a three-year program in which they would be taught the ways and the philosophy and the religion of Babylonian culture. The purpose of this was to cause them to look at life from a Babylonian point of view rather than a biblical point of view. In this program, the Hebrews would be taught the languages of the most influential of Babylon, the most educated of Babylon. There would be an attempt to change their appetite from the things of God to the luxuries of Babylonian culture, and this was the purpose behind feeding them with the meat of Babylon and the wine of Babylon. Again, it was simply an all-out effort to change their identity. We see in verses 6 and 7 of chapter 1, we have mentioned four individuals, Daniel, and we see the other three as well, which we read of here, there being Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Their names, of course, were changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We see to counter the king's plan, the king's intent, we read in verse 8 of chapter 1 that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meat or the wine which he drank. Now, I believe that as you read down through chapter 1, specifically verses 9 through verse 17, I believe we can safely say that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego also purposed in their heart that they would not defile themselves. And as you read through there, you see that these four men are linked together. In verse 19 of chapter 1, the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. So we see that these four men, we see them together. And we want to look tonight here in Daniel chapter 3. We want to take the main thought of the message from what we read in verses 17 and 18. Verse 17, if it be so. Verse 18, but if not. And we want to speak tonight of staying true to God regardless. And that's basically what they were saying there in verse 17 and verse 18. If it be so, we will still serve God. But if not, we will still serve God. We will still remain true. We want to see, first of all, as we look here in Daniel chapter 3, and it's not our purpose to look at all the details of this chapter, just want to notice a few things. We see that there's a lesson here that God's requirements and the world's requirements at some point are going to meet. At some point, we are going to be faced with what God requires. We are going to be faced with what the world requires. God's service runs counter to the ways of the world. And again, we've all discovered by experience that somewhere along the line in our life, the requirements of God's service and the requirements of the world, they're going to meet. And such will always present a challenge. Not only does it present a challenge, it presents a choice. As soon as God's requirements and the world's requirements meet, you have to make a choice. You have to choose one or the other. In our text, we see that Nebuchadnezzar built this image or statue. It was 90 feet tall. It was 9 feet wide. He sent out invitations in the form of royal summonses, and they were sent to military leaders, they were sent to political leaders, judicial leaders, financial leaders. They were sent to all the officers and all those who had authority in all the provinces. And on the appointed day, all these government officials would gather in the plain of Jura. Among them were these three men who had their names changed, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now in this assembly of people, no doubt in the thousands, milling about, simply awaiting instruction, there they are. There's this magnificent statue, and they're just waiting for instruction. What do we do? What are we supposed to do? And they're waiting. Waiting for instruction from the king. Finally, we see in verses 4 through 6, a herald spoke, delivering the edict of the king, that when the music started, everyone was to fall down and to worship the image. And some of these were Hebrews. The requirements of God and the requirements of the world had met in Jura. There they were. You had the requirements of God. You have the requirements of Nebuchadnezzar. On one side, you have the word of God. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness, or anything of anything that is in heaven, or above, or an earth beneath, and that thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them. That's the requirement of God. So on the one side, we have the requirement of God. On the other side, we have the requirement of Nebuchadnezzar, which was simply this, as it's stated in verse 5, fall down and worship the golden image. Two requirements contrary to each other. Everyone in that crowd had to make a choice. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had to make a choice. And there were only two choices. They would either choose the command of God, thou shalt not bow down to any image, or they would choose the command of man. Bow down to the image. They had to choose one or the other. There was no middle ground here. And many times those who have a tendency to look for the middle ground, there is no middle ground. You're either for him or against him. There is no neutrality when it comes to the service of the Lord. And when the ways of the Lord and the ways of the world meet, you have to choose one or the other. And what will determine your choice will be the condition of your heart. What will determine your choice is what you have already purposed in your heart. In some form or other, the image of Nebuchadnezzar is set up. We all come face to face with the images of Nebuchadnezzar. They have many forms. They have many shapes. And you have to bow to either God or the image. You have to bow or submit to God's requirement, or you submit to the world's requirement. And we all know by experience that Satan is there When God's requirements and the world's requirements meet, Satan is there. And he's full of suggestions. And I'm sure that Satan was there this day, full of suggestions, speaking in the ears of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He may have said something like, "Your position requires you to conform to the order of Nebuchadnezzar." He may have whispered in their ear, "You owe it to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar has promoted you from a slave to a position of authority. You owe it to him. Be careful what you owe man. Better be careful. He'll get you in trouble." Satan is always making that suggestion. He would suggest to them that God has put you in this position. Certainly God didn't put you in this position for you to lose this position. So you must bow. God has opened the door of opportunity. Certainly he does not want you to throw that opportunity away. You must bow. It's only this one time. This will be the only time that you'll ever have to bow. And you don't have to bow for very long. You can make it very quick. Just go through the motions. Just go through the motions of bowing. God knows your heart. God knows you don't mean anything when you bow to that image. Just go through the motions. What harm will it do? Seems that the devil will suggest that it's going to cause more harm if you don't bow. More people are going to be affected if you don't bow. What harm will it cause to bow down to this image? Others have bowed. There have been God's people through the years that have bowed. The truth is, that's the reason they were in one of the reasons they were in captivity, because they have become an idolatrous people. So Satan could suggest to them, others have done it. Everybody else is doing it. Look around. Everybody is going to be bowing. Certainly, it won't hurt for you to bow. If you don't bow, everybody's going to be against you. Everybody's going to look at you as some fanatic, as some radical. And you won't be able to be a witness to these people. You are in a position of influence. And certainly, you are more of influence if you live than if you die. And if you don't bow, you're going to die. So, go ahead and bow. You'd be obeying the king's orders. After all, it is God who puts men in authority. And you would only be bowing to the king's order. And really, Nebuchadnezzar is responsible and not you. These would be some of the suggestions that Satan would whisper. But what we have here is God's requirements and the requirements of the world, and they are face to face, and God's people must choose one or the other. There is no middle ground here. There is no gray area here. There was no place to run. There was no place to hide. They had to choose one or the other. And many times God so directs things as to put us in that position, where we come face to face with the world's requirements and God's requirements. And again, it's the condition of our heart that will determine what we do in those times. As we know, these men did not bow. In verse 7, shortly after the royal orchestra began to play, we see that all the people, the nations in all languages, they fell down and they worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. How many times through this chapter we read those words, the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up? Those words are repeated over and over and over again because they're supposed to impress you. The king set this up. The king. Certainly we owe something to the king. And when the music sounded, the music played, everybody fell to the ground in reverence. Everybody but three Jews. While everyone else was bowing, these three stood straight. And I believe they stood straight. I don't believe they were bent over at all. They wanted everybody to know, we are not bowing to this image. And they stood as straight as they possibly could. These three men, while all those around them were on the ground, bowing to this image, worshiping this image, these men remained on their feet. While everyone else was bowing. Perhaps someone would say to them, bow down! Bow down! Didn't you hear? Didn't you hear the music? The music's playing. We're supposed to bow. Bow down. And there they stood, absolutely refusing to bow. They stood firm. They stood decided for God. They stood courageous. They stood there in love to God. They stood there believing God. They stood there aligned with God. They stood there with a very deep sense of God's law, of what God had said, what God had commanded, what God required. They stand there committed, loyal, and devoted to God. They did not bow. And these men were not afraid of being different. Everyone else around them was bowing. But these men stood. When everybody else was bowing, these men standing stuck out. Everybody would notice they're not bowing. They're not bowing. They didn't drop their pencil and bend down to pick it up to make it look like they were bowing. They stood. They stood firm. They didn't bend down at that time to latch their sandals. They stood. They didn't want anybody in that crowd to even think that they were bowing to that image. They stood firm. They stood strong. There are things, as you and I know, that are wrong. There are things that are sin. And it does not matter who may be for them, who may defend them, they're still wrong. It doesn't matter how many others are involved. It is still wrong. And we have to be determined. We are not going to bow to that which is wrong. We're not going to bow to that which goes against the requirements of God. And the decree, the edict went forth, that if you did not bow, you would be cast into a burning fiery furnace. In other words, you would be killed. These men stood firm in spite of a threat. In spite of the threat upon their lives, they stood firm.
You know why? There's a lot of reasons, but one reason, their own personal safety and welfare was not what they were concerned about. What they were concerned about was being true to God. And nothing else mattered. That needs to be so in our lives. We must not be concerned about our own safety. We must not be concerned about our own welfare. Our concern must be, I need to be true to God. I need to be in line with the requirements of God. That needs to be our concern. Thirdly, the beliefs these men did not bow, and their beliefs and practices would soon be challenged. You take a stand, and it will not be long where your beliefs and your practices will be challenged by the world. Don't think it's over just because you do not bow. These men did not get home and think, wow, we got through that. Oh, there's more coming. You're going to be challenged. You're going to be challenged. Verse 8. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. Their accusation was accurate. These men, O king, did not bow. Verse 12. Here's their accusation. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Then he mentions them. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They have not given you proper respect. They have not shown you proper appreciation. They have not honored you. They serve not thy gods. That was true. They don't worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So we see the difference in these men could be clearly seen by others. And immediately it is brought to the attention of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was infuriated. He was infuriated. And the reason he was infuriated was because in his mind, this was a day to celebrate his greatness. This was a day to honor the achievements of Nebuchadnezzar. He's enraged. And the king issued immediate orders to his guards. You go get Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You go get them right now, and you bring them to me without any delay. And I'm sure that these men went out very gladly, very eagerly. And once they found Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they weren't hiding. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were pushed roughly along the stand before Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. He was amazed that they would show such defiance. And we read in verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true? Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Is it true what I've heard? Is it true that you do not serve my gods? Is it true that you do not worship the golden image which I have set up? The world will hear many things. The world will hear things about what we believe. And some of the things they hear, they're true. And the world will come to us and say, is it true? Is it true that you believe such and such? Is it true that you practice such and such? Is it true? They were confronted. You take a stand for God and you cannot hide. You will be confronted. Nebuchadnezzar, he liked Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So he offered them another chance. He told them that the music would play again. And he said, if you bow, we'll just forget about everything else that's happened. And you all can go on. Notice in verse 15, he said, fall down and worship the image in the middle of the verse there, which I have made. Well, I'm going to give you another chance. And if you do what I say, if you align up with my requirements, it'll be very well with thee. And it's sad today that many of God's people have bought that lie. It will never be well to choose the world's ways over God's ways. That's a lie. It's a lie that the world has been telling since the Garden of Eden. Is that not what Satan suggested to Eve? That she could improve her life if she would just follow him and listen to him. He also adds a warning in verse 15. But if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? He's telling them, he's saying, your life is in my hands. A lot of folks have bought that lie also. Your life isn't in anybody's hands but God's. And what he's telling them is your entire future is in my hands. And if you do what I say, things will go very well for you. I hold your future in my hands. Many have bought that lie as well. God holds my future. God holds my life in his hands. So these men were challenged. But notice, they did not bend to the threats and challenges of the ungodly. In verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. That is, king, it's not necessary to give us a second chance, because we're going to do the same thing we did the first time. We don't need to think about it. We don't need to pray about it, because our decision is the same as it was before. We're not going to bow. And how many times the world comes and says, well, would you at least just think about it? No. There's nothing to think about. We have the requirements of God. We have the requirements of man. There's nothing to think about. Honoring and obeying God was really not the issue that was on the table here for these men. It wasn't a matter of consideration. They didn't say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we appreciate your kindness. Appreciate you giving us this other chance, and we're going to pray about it, and we'll get back to you. They said, king, there's no need for us to be careful in this matter. There's no need for us to consider. There's no need for us to reconsider. Oh, king, this is not something that troubles us. We know what we're going to do. This isn't something that puts us in a quandary. We're not going to bow. We're not going to bow to your image. They did not deliberate. They did not hesitate. Their commandment, their commitment was unwavering. They said, Nebuchadnezzar, if it be so, that is, if you throw us in the fiery furnace, and they had no guarantees that he wouldn't, our God, whom we serve, notice they had not forgotten their connection. We're still connected to our God. We're not connected to Babylonian culture. We are connected to our God. And our God, He's able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. They had not lost their confidence of who was in control. Their confidence was unshakable. They said, Nebuchadnezzar, whatever it is that you do to us, we know that our God is able to deliver us. They are saying, our God can keep you from throwing us in the furnace. And if he allows you to throw us in the furnace, our God is able to deliver us out of the furnace. But then in verse 18, but if not, that is, if God choose not to prevent you from throwing us in the furnace, and if God chooses not to deliver us from the midst of the furnace, be it known unto thee, O king, that is, Nebuchadnezzar, let there be no doubt about this. We will not serve thy gods. We will not worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Their convictions were non-negotiable. You don't need to negotiate your convictions. You do not have to negotiate what the Word of God teaches. And these were not, they had convictions that they were not willing to negotiate. They believed that God's commands were firm. They believed that God's commands were final. And therefore, they were unwilling to compromise. They were unwilling to make concessions, even if it cost them their life. Their commitment to God was more than just lip service. They didn't know if they were going to live or die. They didn't know if God would allow Nebuchadnezzar to throw them in the furnace, and they didn't know for sure that if Nebuchadnezzar threw them in the furnace, that God would deliver them. They simply said, our God is able. And he is. We don't know what God's going to do. But king, it really doesn't matter. We're not going to bow. And we're not going to worship your image. In other words, we're going to remain true regardless. Regardless. What an example that these men give us. For all they knew, when they spoke those words in verses 17 and 18, for all they knew, they were speaking their final words. For all they knew, they were writing their own death sentence. For all they knew, they would wake up in glory. They didn't know what God would do. But they knew this. We're not going to bow. We're not going to worship the gods of a godless culture. And you and I, tonight, we have no idea what is going to happen tomorrow. We do not know what God will allow to happen in our lives. We do not know what God will allow to happen in the lives of our loved ones. And if it be so that God blesses our families and God provides all our financial needs. And if it be so that God spares us from problems and spares us from sickness and spares us from disease and suffering and trials and sorrow, if it be so that God spares us from heartache, may we be able to say, if God does all of these things, we'll worship Him, we'll love Him, we'll trust Him, we'll obey Him, we will remain committed and we'll remain devoted to Him. But if not, if God doesn't bless our families, we're still not going to bow. We're still going to remain true to God's word. If God does not provide all our financial needs, if God does not spare us from problems, and if God does not spare us from sickness, and if God does not spare us from disease, and if God does not spare us from sorrow, and if God does not spare us from trials and heartache, let it be known, we're still not going to bow. And we're still going to remain true to the Lord. In other words, we're going to remain true regardless. Too many people today try to bargain with God. They try to put conditions upon God. That, first of all, it's very dangerous. You better be careful what promises you make the Lord. But people will say, Lord, you get me out of this and I'll serve you. You don't put conditions upon God. You're to serve regardless. You're to serve whether God gets you out or not. You're to serve whether God fills your body with disease or whether He delivers you from disease. We're to serve regardless. But if not, we'll still serve. Lord, I'll serve you if you do such and such. Lord, I'll follow you if you do such and such. Lord, I'll live for you if you do such and such. But when they said in verse 18, but if not, they are saying, Nebuchadnezzar, regardless of what happens, we're not going to become the slaves of a godless culture. Regardless of what happens, Nebuchadnezzar, it is our intention to serve God. It is our intention to remain true to the Lord. You know, we live, and it's been preached through the years also, which kind of feeds that idea. We live in a reward-based society. We serve God and we expect God to do something for us. Well, first of all, that's unscriptural. It's a wrong spirit. It's a wrong attitude. We're to serve God regardless. We're to serve Him regardless. If God so chooses to take everyone in our family but ourselves, we're to serve Him regardless. We're not to call into question, Lord, why? I've served you all these years. Why would you do this? It has nothing to do with it. You're to serve Him regardless. That needs to be our intention. That needs to be our aim. We cannot take the position, I wouldn't be able to bear to see such and such. You need to take the position, I'm going to serve God regardless. No matter what happens. No matter who else bows down. Yes, I might be disappointed. I might be greatly disappointed when I see other Hebrews bowing down. But regardless what they do, I'm going to stand. Regardless of what anybody else does. I've been disappointed many times. And there'll be many more disappointments. But you cannot allow, when man disappoints you, you cannot allow that to stop you from serving God. We're to serve regardless. Oh, that God would give us that purpose of heart, that no matter what happens, I just want to serve the Lord. No matter what happens, I just want to bring glory to His name. Whatever it is, that we would stand, that we would stand firm, that we would stand tall when everyone else is bowing down, that we would stand so erect that no one could possibly say, I think they're bowing. They'll know. They're not bowing. They're not bending. Again, they didn't bow. They were given a second chance and they didn't bend. Now's not the time for God's people to be bending. First of all, the truths of God are not ours to bend. They're God's. We're not to be bending. They didn't bow, they didn't bend, and you know what? They didn't burn either. God bless. But even if they did burn, they would have glorified the Lord. God help us to have the conviction of these men. Brother Larry.